Instructional Designers in Offices Drinking Coffee is brought to you by Domino, makers of Domino One, the all-in-one cloud-based e-learning authoring tool for teams. You can learn more at domino.com. That's DOMINKNOW.com. Now, here's this week's episode.
Hey, look, we got it right. Only about 15 minutes late, but better late than never, I always say. Good morning, everybody.
Oh, good morning to everybody. Yeah, it took us a little bit as, there was talk in the chat about, you know, off applying kinetic energy to the systems today. And we didn't quite have to go that far. We managed to do it with just a reboot.
We did. Technical. Just like my doctor said, just bang on your head and you'll be fine.
Yeah. folks, Brent's not lying there. That's what his doctor did say. We were talking about that this morning. And someday, over something like a coffee or something else, maybe we'll let Brent elaborate on that story. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, good times.
Oh, good times at Ridgemont High. No, that's not quite it, but anyway.
We needed to have a good drama this morning and kind of get everybody feeling very intense and intense. Yes. Because of our guest today. Who do we have, Chris?
Well, we have Dr. Tom Hickmore with us. And you're right, Brent. It was a good way
I'm
to
not
build
a doctor.
Up.
I'm not a doctor.
You're not a doctor. Oh, I thought you were. No. I'm sorry. Well, not a doctor.
We were talking doctors, so it just came out.
I'm sure I could fix Brent's head if I were.
Well, there we go. Well, you're good at doctoring video, so that's what we're going to talk about here today. Yeah. Tom, introduce yourself to the folks who have joined us here today. Give us a little bit about yourself.
Hi. My job title is Creative Director at Nice Media, and I've been making corporate video literally since 1987, I think. And then in about 1996, I decided to focus on learning and development, and I went into what they then called multimedia, which is now what we call e-learning. And part of the attraction for that was the idea of doing drama. That was just interesting. And so, yeah, I've done quite a lot of drama. Well, I've done a lot of drama over the years. So the history of how I wrote the book is really that I just discovered I was in a bit of a sort of drama ghetto in a way in L&D. And I thought, you know, there's got to be, I'm now old, I'm ready for, I should be retiring. But I've kind of got thought, I'm just going to speak up because actually, you know, a lot of this needs to be confronted because so much bad drama gets made. And it's actually, when you get right down to it, the sort of basic facts of it, the basic design notions, ideas are quite easily shared. And that's what I'm trying to do now with starting with that book.
Well, you're in a niche for sure. It's an extreme niche in L&D, you know, doing the dramatic videos. A lot of video producers, a lot of folks that do video out there, but focusing on helping folks make it dramatic is, you're right. You're in a space that's been empty for a very long time. So we're super happy to have you here. And I loved your book, by the way. You help keep it very simple. And I'm looking forward to building some drama. So maybe we could kick it off by just maybe explaining some of those basics or maybe lay a little foundation of how people can do dramatic video.
Sure.
Or however you'd like to start it, you know.
That's a very wide general question. I'll go straight onto that. I think the main thing that people get wrong is focusing on, you know, the main point form of teaching really is exposition and instruction. And exposition is kind of like a dirty word in drama, really. You need it, but it's a sort of necessary evil. And there's a kind of tension there. And obviously, most people who've trained as instructional designers don't have any training in drama. There's also the whole history of like learning theory, which is really very much focused on, you know, getting sort of semantic information across and communicating in that way. And drama's not really, you should just never use it for that. And whenever you see it used for that, you know it's going to make a bad drama. I mean, you know, you might have something that looks a bit like a drama, but it might be a role play. You know, if it's like, you know, I'm going to do this and now I'm going to do that and she's going to do that, you know, some very basic thing. But essentially, but if that looks too much like a drama, people are going to read it as a drama and they'll just think that's bad drama. So so then what the interesting thing I think that I'm getting quite excited about is this, I'm just grabbing the book here, but you probably know, do you know Helen Imordino, Mary Helen Imordino Yang? Whoa. But she's one of these, you know, the effective learning researchers and theorists. She's more, she's like associated with Damasio, who's more sort of well-known and famous. But her stuff that she's comes at, she's a lot of the stuff she's looking at is to do with education, like school education, rather than L&D, but it does apply.
Sure.
And what she looks at is the idea that, you know, because of this history of focusing on semantic learning and passing exams and all this stuff, that all the sort of what she, you know, like maybe civics or, you know, reflective learning gets, you know, undervalued, which is the angle that she's on is that's bad for young people's development. But how it has an application in L&D is that her metaphor is that emotions are perceived as sort of naughty children in a china shop, sort of smashing up the pots and things, where she said, in fact, emotions more like the shelving system. There's my shelving system, which holds the learning together. So if you think about it, if you do anything challenging, you know, it has to have, we all know that, you know, it has to have meaning for you. So, you know, we want to stimulate people to reflect upon the meaning of it and perhaps how the learning might be applied. So if you look at something, so what you really want to do is in your drama, focus on difficult choices. And that's how you construct a choice. So let's construct a drama. Essentially, it's just about difficult choices and putting these characters in situations where they have to make choices. And those choices, when you get to that moment, which is the sort of the reflective moment. I'm not talking too much, am I?
No.
Right, great. I'm just going on. Just let me give you an example. If you think about Jaws, as very well known. So it starts off, a young woman's attacked by a shark. Then you've got the sheriff, and he goes and says to the mayor, "We've got to close down the beaches because there's a shark out there and it's killing everyone." And then the mayor says, "I know that, but there's tourism. It's coming up to the, you know, the most important time of the year. We can't do that. Possibly do that. Just keep calm." And then you see the sheriff at the beach, and it's just a calm day, and there's actually no dialogue. And it's just the sheriff at the beach, and you're inside his head, and he's watching people swimming, and he's just sort of like not doing very much. But you know that. So that at that point there is what she calls transcendent thinking, or strategic thinking is another way she said. And what you're doing, so if we take that into a learning context, you will have set up something that could go wrong, and it's that moment at the point that sheriff is in a situation where he has to make a choice. You know, does he override the mayor or does he let people get killed? And you're watching that and thinking, oh my gosh, that's terrible, I need to intervene, you know. And that, so there's nothing being said, but it's stimulating you into active thinking. And that's active thinking on the part of your learner is what you can do with drama, get them actively thinking. But you have to say to yourself, well, in getting there, I might use some exposition to like build a story to get us into that position, but it must all serve that story position, because the bit you're after is that active thinking moment. I mean, and you can have quite a lot of them across a piece, you know, it doesn't have to be one big one that, you know, and everything else is just boring. But, you know, that decision-making is what drama's about, basically.
That hits the perfect spot too, because I'm envisioning myself watching him in that scene, and you just know as a viewer, you like you said, you want to like jump in and go, it's out there. You know, the shark's out there. And then like the tension that they build is is huge when they do that. But nothing is said. You're right. It's just that reflective moment that starts to suck the learner in. And I think we avoid the quiet. Like, who's going to put just a quiet moment of reflection of the user looking at somebody having that moment on the screen? I don't think a lot of people think about that.
Indeed, yeah.
You were mentioning earlier bad exposition within drama, and as you were mentioning that, I was thinking of the number of times I've watched something, probably like one of those, a procedural, either it's a detective procedural TV or particularly the medical procedurals where, you know, the one person is explaining something and the other person says, you mean da, 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 to, and, you know, because the first doctor has used the technical term and the second one is translating for those of us, you know, as the viewer, and those kinds of things, when they're done clunkily, we're so surrounded by, you know, video-based drama, you know, we have it on our screen every night and we see it on small screens, etc. Those of us, you know, we've all grown up with a sort of I was going to call it not a BS detector, but a bad a badness detector, right? You get it and you go, oh, this is clunky, this isn't, and then that, you know, and then the whole thing kind of then crumbles. Anyway, for me as a storytelling experience, that need to inject something informationally into a moment that's supposed to be, you know, tension filled or something like that.
Yeah, no, you're dead right. And we're all experts about drama because we got when it's wrong, but that doesn't mean we can necessarily create it because we don't know quite how it gets there. But we do know that exposition when it's not dramatized. So the good example of exposition might be one is, in Terminator, you know, come with me now if you want to live. You know, that guy is going to, like, you know, if he gets hold of you, he's going to kill you. He's going to shoot you. He's going to get at you. You will not stop. Nothing can stop him. You know, that's an exposition moment, but it's, you dramatized it because it's life or death, you know. And I know that's a bit extreme. The other one that I've put in the book is about the James Bond movies, which if you look at the history of them, they always have an exposition. They've got to have exposition because they've got to explain how the gadgets work. Mm-hmm. And so they start off, if you look at I can't remember if it's Dr. No or Goldfinger, but one of the early ones, it's almost like an old-fashioned training film. Mm-hmm. When the sequence, when they say, and here's, I know it's from Russia with Love, he says, here's your case. So you open the case. If you don't turn the handles like this, it's going to explode in your face. And then, you know, gas will go everywhere. And then as they develop the characters, they get in Goldfinger, then James Bond, Sean Connery, sort of says to Q, Q says, and then if you press this button, you've got an ejector seat. And he says, you're joking. To which Q says, I never joke about my work. And then you have this character tension whereby it becomes, so you're building conflict into it. So you've got like a sort of naughty schoolboy character and the sort of pompous professor, and that's run right the way through till today. And they built it, and now if you didn't have that scene, people go looking for it, you know, because it's come so popular.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. My mom was a big fan of James Bond, so I have seen them all. Well, not the most recent ones. I kind of stopped watching, but it was one of those things. So how do we apply this kind of stuff to the e-learning courses or the e-learning videos that we do? I mean, obviously we're not professionals. It takes time. It takes experience. It takes practice. Let's just say we're a regular old standard e-learning professional and we'd like to try to do some drama, but we certainly don't want to screw it up and have it be too cheesy. Is there an easy path we can follow?
I don't know about easy, but I do know that, you know, a lot of people associate quality with production values, and that's really, you know, quality is about design. And so if you can, you know, if you've got a good story, you can watch it on a, you know, black and white TV from 50 years ago and be engrossed in it. So it really is very much about the design. So I think if we just all follow the ideas of working towards these insightful moments, the difficult choices, and I would say even more ideally, dilemmas, although even the best, because then there's no right choice. If you can show a dilemma, that even sparks off more thought. A good place to find them, if you're thinking, is in what I call like the grey areas, which is the overlap of public and private. So at work, you know, which is where a lot of behavioural stuff takes place. But, you know, so for example, if we look at compliance training, there's a lot of information to show. Research shows that it's pretty useless, really, because, you know, unless you challenge the culture, and one of the main cultural things is that more experienced people tend to bend the rules and less experienced people want to stick to the rules, but they're frightened of challenging the culture that the more experienced. And that's, funny enough, there's actually, I heard about a case, I think it was in Canada. No, I can't remember where it was, but I know that some police in America, like I can't remember if it was in North America, were using this kind of thing, but it actually wasn't drama, but it was scenario learning, exactly for the, to counter things like the George Floyd situation, because people not, you know, there were people there who would have spoken up if they were empowered to speak up. But, you know, so you, if you can go through these kinds of situations, either imagination, you know, either with a role play or with a drama, you can make people imagine themselves in those situations and say, you know, when should I challenge stuff, you know? And so you don't even have to necessarily answer the question. You can just pose the question, and then maybe the discussion might be a chaired discussion. It might be in a MOOC. It might be just something that you hope will happen spontaneously, something else in the e-learn that, you know, that sparks it off. So, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe set up the situation and have that be sort of the video piece of it. And I know I very quickly moved to e-learning, and I probably shouldn't do that, right? As instructional designers, I think a lot of us still do classroom-based, whether it's face-to-face or obviously because of the pandemic and all that stuff, we do it online. But having that dramatic video set the scene first and then have the conversation with either the facilitator and the group and see how people would respond, you know, chatting over Zoom or whatever, or in a classroom, I think is that's where that valuable conversation happens, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Because, and what you're doing there is you're getting people to generate their own meaning, and you know that's much more powerful than telling them, you know. And that's, you know, that's the power of it. So, which obviously exposition doesn't do that for you. You know, exposition is important, but not in this medium. It's just, it's a separate medium. In fact, funny enough, you can actually, a useful thing to notice is that you can, if you've got a piece of video in an e-learn, you can maybe put the exposition about the scene before the scene. So that might come in the e-learn. So, you know, Fred and Janice are having an argument about, I don't know, you know, a pay rise next week or something, you know, so, you know, you just set up the scene and then you see the scene. So that's another way to do it.
It helps keep the video production quality down a little bit too, or not the quality, but just the amount of video. If you could do a little bit of the narration and setting it up ahead of time, but then show the situation, it helps from that perspective as well. What's been your best video that you've done for e-learning that you think has been the most effective? Or for L&D in general?
We did one, I don't know about the most, because you never really know, do you? But a couple of years ago, we did one which won this little award that's sticking out there, but which was the Learning Excellence Award. But that was for Health Education England, and it was about adult safeguarding. And for that, it was to go into a MOOC, and they had 20 minutes of drama, and they didn't really know what they wanted to put in it. But they kind of thought, gosh, it's got to be about, you know, the sort of violence that and abuse that we deal with every day, you know, because that's, we want to, you know, this is a serious subject, and we want to sort of, you know, get people and go, ah! And then I kind of thought, well, you know, they haven't got very much money. That stuff costs quite a lot to film. Yeah. Plus, do you necessarily learn anything more by seeing that stuff, you know? And it's also about multidisciplinary working. So I sort of turned it all around and said, why don't we just have, is there an an instance where you have to investigate the death of someone who you were all entrusted to care for, you know, and that there is such a thing. So we decided, we made it a sort of post-mortem meeting with it, with these different disciplines coming together, and they have to try and work out, and this is what actually happens. They have to kind of try and work out a narrative of how they all fell short and what the reality was. And for that, of course, so that's very much like a courtroom drama, really. What that means is you've got two advantages. One is a little bit like Alien. You don't show the monster, but you talk about the horror of the monster, and that makes it in a way worse, you know, than actually showing it. And the other part is that because it's like this courtroom thing, you get a lot of exposition that has to come in there to make sense of it. But it's all dramatized exposition. You know, it's all making everything you say has a meaning that reflects on this woman's life, you know. So that was I was really proud of that, because we only had, you know, it ended up with like six people in a room filming them for a day, but it had this really huge resonance, you know. Mm.
That's awesome. So you filmed the post-mortem then. You filmed the conversation of the people talking through piecing together that narrative.
Exactly, yeah. And it was also, just in sort of learning terms, we sort of mapped it across the module so that we made sure that different elements of the learning were reflected in different sequences. And it was as if it was taken from a 2-hour, 3-hour meeting into 20, you know, little snippets.
Yeah. Cool.
That's neat. I mean, there are, like you mentioned, a courtroom drama kind of a framework, or even, you know, the procedurals that I was mentioning earlier. There are some narrative genres that do have, you know, some nice outlets for wedging in exposition, you know, as needed, if they're done well, and they don't ring hollow for us in that kind of a way. Are there things, let's talk about, I guess, maybe the places where this doesn't really make sense to apply. I mean, there's been a mention in a couple of places. Brett asked earlier in the chat if folks had, you know, do a lot of video, and there were lots of things, references to, you know, demonstration videos and software related videos and those sorts of things. And I mean, not everything requires, you know, drama. Some things are just, you know, better kept simple, etc. So, you know, are there places where you've been asked to work in this kind of dramatic mode and said, you know, no, that doesn't really apply. It doesn't make sense at all for what you're talking about trying to do?
Definitely. You know, one is if you're trying to, you know, a lot of exposition, and it's mainly about the exposition. And the other is if there is an organization that are, and this is often the case, excuse me, do you know what? I'm going to have a bit of a cold, so I'm just going to have.
No worries.
This is a tiny bit of brandy here, so excuse me.
It's medicinal. It's all good.
Purely medicinal, honestly. Sometimes some organizations are reluctant to show conflict. They don't want to show, you know, the idea that anyone is less than perfect in their organization. And if they're too resistant to that, then you just can't tell a story, you know, because a story needs conflict. I mean, you can have external conflict, but it's harder to characterize it, you know. I mean, you can have a sort of team working together to overcome something. But once again, it's a bit harder to, especially for a short piece, you know, it's easier just to have two people come up against each other. One sort of solution is to have different people from different parts of the organization. So you might have imagine like a salesperson is going to have a different agenda to a production person, and they might well come into conflict, which might shed light on issues, you know. So, but they are both, you know, trying to serve the organization to the best of their ability, but, you know, there are inevitably conflicts there. So.
Yeah, we're showing that. There's a great question in the chat that I think, and I think you've kind of touched on this, but it might be fun to put a real fine point on. And Mohammed's asking, you know, basically, what is the difference between writing drama and just writing in general?
Well, writing in general is like is pretty vague, but I'm going to say, you know, drama has to be, in general, it's you are going towards these dramatic moments, and dramatic moments are about conflict and insight. Okay. And so really you particularly work on the structure of the piece before you write the dialogue, and how much dialogue, you know, in the end you try and keep the dialogue to a minimum. So I suppose that's the main difference. I mean, I know when you write an essay, you structure it and then write it ideally as well, but you know,
yeah, I think, well, I think, I mean, I think it's a great point. I think to me, I would kind of translate that as the difference between writing an essay and writing dialogue, like writing a script with that human beings need to act out. It's two very different forms of writing. I don't know if anybody in the chat has attempted to write a script, dramatic or not. I think it's definitely a completely different sort of thinking process and you know, there's definitely a different style of writing than just writing an essay or writing a procedural document, right? Or writing a spec document for a piece of hardware or, you know, a process for a manufacturing environment or something like that, right? I guess to me, the best way to separate it would be you've got the procedural documentation that somebody has to write, but then at some point, you're going to have to explain to these folks, if you do the procedure wrong, this is what happens. And that might be where the drama comes in, right? Where you can show that incidence where, you know, Bob decided, you know, that he knew better and he was going to go ahead and touch the blue wire to the green wire, you know. And
stop playing it, yeah. I could give you a little example, Matt. Another little example perhaps is... someone came to us, we were doing these little dilemma type videos. They were working, you know, they liked this idea of the dilemmas that they could discuss.
Yeah.
And one of them was about having, in a large engineering project, it all gone well, but they developed an app for the client, and because and they'd forgotten to get, you know, separate out the IP for the app in the contract. And that meant that the client had ownership of the app, but what they wanted and what they should have done, if they, you know, was keep the IP but license the app, because obviously they could resell it to other clients. And they hadn't, somehow no one had actually thought that through. And they said to me, well, you just want that moment when they say, oh no, this has happened, you know, that's the moment. And I said, no, that's not the moment, because that just, you know, that's just gone straight away.
That's the ending.
How do you make it as painful as possible? You know, so what we did was we took these characters, you know, the developer and the manager, and then they had to go and have a meeting with the guy whom they accidentally sold it to. And so it was basically like two kids going to the headmaster's office and sort of squirming and saying, oh, well, you know, it's really nice. It's a really good production, you know, that thing that we've done for you. But actually, could we possibly ask you to have that back? You know, you can license it off us. You know, obviously, how's he going to behave? You know, but that's what makes it memorable, is because you're focusing on the emotional elements of it. It's all about the emotion. It's just about the emotion. And also, if you think, just going back to the thing about writing and the difference, really, when you direct a scene, you talk about subtext. I don't know if you're aware of that, but the subtext is the emotional to and fro that goes underneath the text. And that's really what a drama is about. It's about the subtext. It's about, you know, it's also how you direct it. You know, I'm attacking you, you're defending, you know, you're squirming, I'm continuing to attack you, or whatever it is, you know. That's the kind of thing that you're kind of
that tension, right? You're trying to create that level of tension in the viewer and the user, and that's what makes it dramatic. And I think that's a great point in having somebody say, well, yeah, but, you know, trying to coerce somebody into doing something or getting something back or, you know, doing that. Like, I think everybody has experienced those moments before. And I think that would be another interesting thing to talk about, is trying to make the drama be relatable too, right? You kind of have to utilize that analysis phase of instructional design too, where you have to kind of get to know who the audience is going to be and what type of drama are they going to be able to relate to. That's probably not easy to do either.
That is true. You do want that. But equally, I think there's a sort of paradoxical thing in that, because I think in a drama, you because you want to make it as heightened as possible, and you want to make it as, it's almost like, what is the philosophical, it's almost philosophical, metaphysical, this point that you want to make that sparks off the transcendent thinking. So therefore, you know, what's the maximum point of discomfort or, you know, challenge that can you take this idea to? And that could, so in that sense, it doesn't necessarily
relate so matter. Much.
Yeah. So it's a little bit less prosaic, you know, prosaically related or whatever the word is, you know, yes, it comes from real situations, but how, I don't know how often it's going to go to that peak. And I think people are very often also, they feel it's got to be just sort of kitchen sink, as we say over in Britain, every day, you know, not heightened. But it doesn't have to be a melodrama for it to be heightened, you know, because those events do happen frequently, you know, in every organization. It's just that they aren't really, you know, you just don't really want to think about them, you know, obviously. You know, that's the sort of thing that people discuss in the coffee room or whatever, but not so much in the management room.
Yeah. You were mentioning like the medical situation project that, you know, that you worked on, you know, where a group comes in with certain ideas of what they want, but you recognize some things, and maybe going in a different kind of attack. How do you work with the client? What kinds of ways do you, you know, bring in the possibility that their original vision may not be the exact thing or the best particular thing? We all know in our world, you know, whether we're e-learning designers or doing something else in L&D, so often we're handed something and said, here, make this into, you know, a training thing or and so the vision is already set of what it's, you know, going to be. What are some of the ways that you've been able to sort of either convince people, I guess, that maybe something else is the way that it really ought to work?
Yeah, I'm sure it's just the same as you guys, really. You know, sometimes you get, and it's mainly to do with what stage you're brought in. I mean, sometimes you can be lucky and you've got a client and they've written, maybe they've already written a script sometimes, and you might be lucky and that could be, wow, that's actually a really good script. More often than not, if they come at that late stage, it can be quite a prosaic script and you're thinking, it's almost, is it worth doing a drama? Well, hang on, they've got some money. I'm going to do it. You know? You know, you can do your best. You can do a lot in terms of performance and small adjustments and so forth. And I suppose what we try to do increasingly, and as I say, the reason I wrote this book, and I'm getting bolder and bolder because of getting to that stage in my career, you know, is just to try to, is to try and challenge people and try and to work with them early, at an earlier stage, you know, and listen to what they're saying, obviously, but as any learning designer does, you know, we try to come up with something that's going to hit the mark for them. I mean, obviously we do other sorts of video. It's just that drama's my passion and it's what I, you know, and it's also the bit that's least understood. So
yeah,
that's one of the reasons I thought I'd write about it.
Does I got another question in the Q&A. Does how you set up drama differ if you have a wide international audience?
Yes. I mean, that is a tricky thing. A lot of our stuff is for wide international audiences, but usually within one organization, which has ostensibly at least an international organizational culture. And you know, we've done things in other languages, but very often that English is the lingua franca of an organization. And then it is just that we are trying to cast it very accurately in terms of, you know, using native speakers as opposed to trying to get people to like do accents, you know, which is kind of anti, it kind of defeats the purpose, doesn't it, really?
Right.
You know, it's Alec Guinness in, actually, I can't think what he was playing now, but when he was blacked up, but, you know, it's almost going back to that sort of territory, isn't it? So,
right.
Yeah.
I didn't realize we were pushing past our regular time, but since we started late, I figured we'd have a few extra minutes to chat with you, but we should probably wrap it up. Is there any just last minute couple tips that you can offer up to folks besides buying your fabulous book, by the way? I've already told people about it, and Guy is a fan too. It's a quick, easy read, and it hits all of the points, and I would highly recommend it for sure.
I think the main thing is, the biggest tip I'd give is just, if it's not for emotional purposes and trying to get people into this transcendent thinking mode, you shouldn't be doing a drama. And then we could make drama a lot better if people just stopped doing that right away. You know, that would be, that's the easiest change.
Very cool. Drop a chat, drop your a link to your book and your other contact details into the chat there for folks who might be interested in pursuing that a bit more. Thanks so much for joining us here today. It's despite our technical challenges getting started, it's been a really fascinating conversation, and I think that folks will want to learn more. We'll include this information on our Domino blog wrap-up session here. Speaking of Domino, who, you know, is our sponsor today, don't forget, folks, if it's of interest, there is you know, an opportunity if you would like to give Domino one at Whirl. I'm sorry, I'm doing bad copy and paste myself this morning.
You know what you need is a quick button there that you can push like I this, do, where you just push the button, bam, it goes right in like
I
that.
I do. Plus, there's also the idiotic LinkedIn group that we invite everybody to join, where we post a lot of information and extra things. And so meet us there, gang.
And I want to know, I'm going to have to ask you later about what Reptile Day is up at up on the top of your screen there. It kept drawing my attention, and I kept thinking to ask, but I never could quite work the segue into the conversation. So
it's just a very old fun film I made.
Excellent. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been fantastic. We've never talked about drama before, and I'm super glad we did. Thanks for hanging out, Tom.
Awesome. Thanks so much for inviting me, guys.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next time.
Woohoo! Here's the big ending. All right. Adios, everybody.